You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And you are hopefully listening to this live tonight on Heritage Radio Network, but you can also always podcast any one of these shows and listen at your leisure. So, what's happening? So I went skiing yesterday. I took my niece skiing. It was her first time. She had never skied before. She'll be 11 next week. It wasn't my first time. I used to ski, but it was my first time back in 13 years. So I was a little scared. But actually, I came back very strong. Turns out I'm a better skier now than I ever was back then, which I think has something to do with the way that skis are designed now. If you're a skier, you may know this. But way back when I started skiing in the 80s, skis were really, really long and really skinny. And now skis are really short and hourglass shaped, and they're so much easier to ski on. So much easier. Especially if you're as short as me. So easy. So it was good. And she did really well. I did really well. We had a great old time. Skiing was pretty good. Although, we were in the Poconos. Now, growing up in New York, I used to ski in the Catskills and up in New England. I didn't even know there was skiing in Pennsylvania until I dated someone who, years ago, who was from Pennsylvania. Okay, I didn't even know you could ski in the Poconos. And I'm sorry, but those, you can't even call them mountains. You know, they're cute. They're like little mountainettes, but really, mountains? I mean, sorry, Pennsylvania people, but that's, what is that? But anyway, we stayed at this really cute hotel. Not to use the word cute twice, but it was a hotel that was a, it had, you know, in the era of railroad travel, there used to be these old hotels along the tracks in towns if people were traveling by train, and they would get off and they would stop and spend a night somewhere, refresh themselves. That sort of era. So probably late 1800s. Very kind of charming, picturesque place. The building itself was great. The interior, on the other hand, was so completely overloaded with faux Victoriana. It was like Laura Ashley went in there and like threw up and exploded at the same time. A little too many roses, if you know what I mean. But it was very warm and cozy and convenient, and the room, you know, it was nice and warm and had a fireplace, although it was a gas fireplace, which I still think is a little weird, because to me that's not a fire, but that's just burning gas. But anyway, you know, and it was good. It was very cozy, nice. And it came with breakfast. Now, if you've been listening to my show, you know how I feel about breakfast. Love the breakfast. I need to eat a decent breakfast every day. And I have very specific ideas about what I want for breakfast. But when I'm traveling, I'm willing to be flexible. As long as I can, you know, get some protein, get something decent, I'm good. I'm okay. I'm not that picky or demanding. So we go downstairs to eat breakfast because we're going to, you know, hit the slopes as early as we can. So it's like 7:30. And the very nice lady who runs the hotel says, oh, yeah, go into the bar. Everything is set up there for you. And there's a whole spread. And but I also will come and take your hot breakfast food order. So we said, okay. So we go over to the bar. And this spread that she had on the bar was like if General Foods threw a wedding and Cargill and Kraft were getting married. Every single thing on that counter, on that bar, was processed, packaged, industrial. It was like there had been some kind of massive worldwide blight that wiped out all living agriculture, and the only food left came from the shelves of Walmart. That's what it was like. It was crazy. There was like a bag of sliced white sandwich bread next to a toaster. There were those little teeny boxes of cereal. You know, the little tiny ones. You used to be able to cut those open and pour the milk right inside the bag, which I loved when I was a little kid. I don't know if you can still do that because I don't really eat cereal. But it was like the, you know, the fakey real healthy food like Smart Start, which actually has more sugar in it than like a candy bar. You know, just crap, little boxes of cereal. You know, basically the all white flour, all white sugar, sprayed on synthetic vitamins cereals. There was yogurt, but it was like those little, what are they called? Light and Fit yogurts. So they're sweetened with NutraSweet, and then they have like those like globby bits of fruit, like that processed fruit in the bottom, and it's all thickened with a lot of gelatin and cornstarch and thickeners and modified food starch because it's non-fat, so they feel like they have to make it really thick and gooey so people get the illusion of rich. I mean, just like something so far removed from the actual concept of yogurt. It's probably not even legal to call it yogurt. Anyway. Oh, yeah, there was also a plate of donuts, like glazed, frosted donuts. So, you know, more white flour, more white sugar, but fried. Little boxes of cereal, white flour, white sugar, put in a little box. It was like the white flour, white sugar parade of nations out there. And then, oh, yeah, but there was also a plate that had like a couple bananas. So, you know, a few bananas. Although apparently I was just reading that there's a worldwide banana blight happening and within the next year or so, we won't have any more bananas anymore. So say goodbye to your bananas. Eat them now while you can. But anyway, that's what it was. Like an entire buffet of processed, packaged, industrialized, non-food, food-like substances. To paraphrase Michael Pollan. And my sister and I just looked at each other like, holy crap, what is this? What are we going to eat? Because we don't eat that way. And we had my niece and we were off to do a day of skiing. She couldn't eat a donut for breakfast. Although all the other kids at the hotel were happily sucking down the donuts. I don't really know how those kids function. I mean, maybe they just live on sugar. I don't know. But anyway, then she came over and she said, oh, I'm also serving hot breakfast items. Here, let me tell you what we have. Well, today what we have is we have cinnamon French toast. We have strawberry cream cheese stuffed French toast, or we have omelets. So we were like, oh, good, finally some eggs. So cinnamon French toast, so more white flour, more white sugar, little cinnamon fried up in a pan. Cream cheese, strawberry cream cheese stuffed French, I mean, I can't even get into it. Anyway, I'm sure people love this stuff. You're probably all listening to me thinking, well, what's wrong with that? It sounds great, but she wasn't actually even like making the French toast. It was like frozen that they were heating up because the kitchen door opened and I saw the boxes of it back there. So we had some omelets. It was fine. She said, oh, I have a mushroom and cheese omelet. I said, okay, that's great. I'll take it. And so she brought it out and the mushrooms inside were raw. They didn't even cook the freaking mushrooms, but it was fine. I got my protein. I was happy. It was okay. Everybody was fine. I ate a banana and, you know, I was good. But it was like, it was kind of mind-boggling yet not because, you know, we left New York, we were in America, and that's America. You know, white, strawberry flavored, white food America. That's what it is. But it's so weird because it's like we're living in this like it's like an inverted bizarro world. Remember on Seinfeld, bizarro world where everything you thought was right was wrong and everything was the opposite? So it's like the process and the packaged industrial stuff has become the norm. Like that's what people expect and they trust and that's what they want. Whereas like the actual food, the food that people are cooking is like people are sort of distrustful of that now. It's very weird. Like people would rather eat those little stupid boxes of cereal and NutraSweet gelatin thickened yogurt. And for what they're paying to put that stuff on the table, I mean, that stuff's not cheap. You're paying a premium for all that processing and packaging. Like you could cook up a gigantic pot of organic oatmeal and, you know, put out some nuts and some dried fruit and everybody would be happy anyway. And that's what skiers should be eating if you're going to go out and ski all day. But I feel like there's like this fear and there's this mistrust now of anything that hasn't come prepackaged from a factory. It's very strange. It's like we've lost the ability, the like innate, not inane, That's innate too. The innate human ability to seek out actual food and, you know, eat it and cook it. It's like we've lost that ability. It's like those fish that live in caves and they never see light, and so they become albinos and they go blind because they don't need those senses anymore. It's like that. Well, that's them. That's the people who eat that way. That's not me. Not my problem. Not me. I live in a world of real food, and I'm happily living there and choose to live there, and that's why I do this show, and that's why I'm sure people like you listen to the show, because you also live in that world with me, and we're very happy to stay in that world. And even though here in this real world right now, the weather is even more frightful than it was last week, because last week, well, we had a blizzard. This week, we've had an ice storm tonight, and now it's raining, and it's icy, and it's disgusting, and there's dirty snow everywhere, and it makes me just want to stay in and cook, which I never really get a chance to do. So that when I'm out there in America and I come home from the land of, you know, white and strawberry flavor food products, I can have something real to eat, something real and delicious and warming and hearty. And that's what we're going to talk about in the next segment. So we're going to take a quick break. I will stop bitching and complaining about the state of American industrial food, and we'll be back. Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. That's me on the drums, by the way, in the background. Just doing a little solo between segments. You didn't know I was a drummer, did you? Anyway, welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I am Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. So in the first segment, if you're just tuning in, I was complaining, like I often do, about the state of food in the U.S. Not real food, not food like here in my little world of, you know, sustainable, organic, locavore, mecca of Roberta's food. Food that you get when you leave the island of New York and go out there into the vast American wilderness. So, but I'm back from there. I was skiing and I'm back, and it's winter and I want to cook because it's winter. And so you remember last week, if you listened last week, I talked about brothy soups. Last week was all about soup and soup making and brothy soups. Chicken soup for the, what would we call it? Chicken soup for the snow. Chicken soup for the snow. Jack came up with that one, not me. That was a good one. Anyway, and I talked about making a stock or a broth from a leftover chicken carcass because I had roasted a chicken. So, and turning it into soup. So that was your homework. Did you do it, class? Yes. Well, I did, and it was really good. It was great soup. I finished eating it today for lunch, believe it or not. But since the weather is still so sucky, I want more hot, soupy kind of stuff. So last week, I was reading the Times, New York Times. I think it was in the food section. It may have been in the magazine. I don't remember. And Bittman, Mark Bittman, he had an article on chicken adobo. Adobo. Now, not Spanish adobo, not like Goya adobo. Maybe you've seen ads for Goya adobo, which is like a dry spice blend that's basically just made out of salt. I looked it up today. It's like salt, MSG, dried powdered garlic, and dry lemon flavoring, I think they called it. They called it tropical lemon flavoring. I don't know what that is. And oregano. Did I mention that? Anyway, not that adobo. Not Goya adobo. Filipino adobo. Now, Filipino adobo is a braised dish. And Spanish adobos are, well, they can be a lot of different things. Puerto Rican adobo is usually like a dry spice rub for chicken or pork. Mexican adobos can be sort of like a wet paste. It really refers to like this stewing process, the verb, but it varies enormously throughout the Latin cuisine world. But the Filipino adobo is totally different. Filipino adobo is a process where you braise chicken or pork in vinegar. Sometimes vinegar with soy sauce added, sometimes with sugar, sometimes with coconut milk, but vinegar is the primary ingredient. And this was something they were doing in the Philippines for thousands of years before the Spanish arrived. But when the Spanish arrived, they saw the braising technique being done and they just said, oh, adobo. And so it became known as adobo, but it's very different Filipino adobo. Now, I had learned about making adobo a long time ago when I was working at Savoy in New York. I was there like 50 years ago or so I worked there. And I worked with a guy named Romy Doratan, who is Filipino. And he was in the process of opening his own restaurant at the time, but he was working at Savoy part-time. And he made it and taught me about it. And we were doing adobo chicken gizzards. And I think we were doing hearts, chicken hearts, too. I have this vague memory. It was a long time ago. But, you know, we were kind of ahead of the curve there of the, you know, nose to tail eating. I mean, I don't know if many places were serving adobo gizzards and hearts that were not, you know, like ethnic Filipino kind of places. This was like high end New York. But anyway, Romy opened this restaurant called Cendrillon in Soho, and he had it for about a decade or so. And then the rents in Soho, of course, went, you know, forced them out. Now they moved and they have a restaurant in Ditmas Park, Brooklyn, called Purple Yam. So you should check it out. Go give Romy some business. But anyway, so I learned that back then, this process of braising in vinegar and soy sauce. And then I never did it again. And I sort of never thought about it again. And I like sort of left my mind. And then Bittman did this article and I was like, oh yeah, adobo, it's so good. And it was in the back of my mind somewhere, stowed away. And then I went to Costco, because you know I love Costco. And Costco, my Costco in Brooklyn, the demographic tends to skew toward the Latino population and also toward who? There's not that much Asian stuff sold there. But suddenly they had two Korean products that I like. They had really good Korean rice vinegar and they had really good Korean roasted nori sheets, you know, seaweed. The little ones in the package that are like the snack pack that I love. They had 27 packs for $10, which is crazy cheap. So bought a couple cases of that. And we bought like two huge jugs of the rice vinegar because we use a lot of rice vinegar in my house. And I also had these organic chicken thighs in my freezer that I had also bought at Costco previously. And I had pulled those out to defrost that day when we went to Costco because I thought, oh, it's really cold and I'm going to make like a stew or something like that. So we went to Costco, we bought this vinegar, bought a lot of other stuff too. And then we took our customary Saturday big walk. We do that on the weekends. We take not just a walk, a big walk. It qualifies as a big walk if it goes over 4 miles. But 4 is small for a big walk. We're usually looking at 6 to 10. This week we did 6 because it was kind of cold out. So we came home from the big walk and the chicken was thawed and I was like, what should I do with the chicken? And then I remembered I had all this vinegar and I had just read this article by Bittman about adobo and I had adobo on the brain. And so I said, let's make adobo. But since the rice vinegar I had was Korean, I thought I'm going to do a little Korean kind of adobo thing. It was sort of like adobo meets kaibi, which is braised Korean short ribs. So a little nod to Korea, but really a technique grounded in adobo. So when in Bittman's article, he gave the recipe for Romy's adobo, since Romy's kind of like the go-to guy for discussions and quotes about Filipino food when they do articles in the food world. It's often Romy who gets quoted. He would know. He's Filipino. He has a restaurant, you know. But he puts coconut milk in his, which apparently is a regional thing. It's because where he's from in the Philippines, they use coconut milk. Some people use it, some don't. Some people put sugar in, some don't. It's probably like any national dish in any country. There's a million people doing it and a million ways to do it. But the fundamental thing that everyone comes back to is the vinegar. And the vinegar that you're supposed to use is coconut sap vinegar or palm sap vinegar, really. So I was looking, I didn't have any of that, but I looked it up. I wanted to sort of, you know what that was about. And it's what it is. It's fermented sap from coconut palms. Apparently makes a really good vinegar. And then it reminded me that I have seen that in the store in Asian markets, and I never really knew what to do with it. Coconut sap vinegar. But I had all this rice vinegar, so that's what we were going to do. So we're going to take another quick break, and then I know you're just dying to find out what happened. We'll talk about my adobo when we get back. Spacey music. Ooh. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. More information at HearstRanch.com. I could take a nap listening to that. Anyway, welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Okay, so we're talking about adobo, Filipino adobo, which is a method of braising food in vinegar. So, my Korean / Filipino adobo project was underway. I marinated the chicken thighs in the rice vinegar with some soy sauce. I decided, yes, I will use the soy sauce. I added some turbinado sugar, which is like raw brown cane sugar. Now, you know, I'm always ranting about sugar being in things here, but I'm perfectly fine with using sugar as an ingredient, like as a seasoning, as a flavoring, if I'm baking, like that's totally cool. I am not anti-sugar. I am anti things that are only made from sugar and white flour, which is the bulk of American food. Oh, and corn, of course. So don't get me wrong. As I was getting ready to come over here tonight, I was like, I'm going to do this rant about sugar, but then I'm going to talk about how I cooked with sugar. So sugar's okay, you know, as long as it's not like 80% of your daily caloric intake. Anyway, so some turbinado sugar went in. I put in about 10 cloves of peeled garlic. And then I wanted it to be a little bit like, sort of like gingery, spicy flavor. But I didn't have any fresh ginger. But I had powdered ginger, so I put some powdered ginger in there. And then I threw in some five spice, some Chinese five spice, because what I really wanted was like the flavor of star anise in there. I wanted it to kind of be like Vietnamese clay pot pork. I couldn't really decide where I was going with this. I wanted to make adobo. I wanted it kind of Korean, but I wanted it to be Vietnamese clay pot pork too. That's what we call Asian confusion, not Asian fusion. But it's okay. It all worked together. So I put some Chinese five spice powder in there, because I didn't have any star anise. And I marinated it for 20 minutes because I was in a hurry. Romy says you should do it overnight or at least a couple of hours. But I was hungry and it was cold and it was we were tired. So anyway, so then I threw it, just dumped it all in a pot. I think I added a little bit of chicken stock that was left over from the brothy soup project. And I peeled and cut up a couple of carrots, which is not at all traditional. However, in Korean kaibi, when you braise your kaibi, you can put carrots in that. So it was okay. So I put some nice, I just bought some organic carrots. I put those in there. And then I just cooked it for like 20 minutes until the chicken was tender, because chicken thighs cook really fast. These were boneless. The best part of a chicken is boneless chicken thigh. So as soon as they were tender, I took them out and then I boiled the liquid down. I reduced it down. The cuisson, as we would say at my day job at the culinary school where I teach, your braising liquid is known as your cuisson. I learned the word cuisson because my first day of my first ever restaurant job 20 years ago, I accidentally dumped the artichoke cuisson down the drain and got yelled at my first day of my first cooking job. And that's how I learned the word cuisson, because I threw it out. So I boiled the cuisson down to nappe, which means you take it down till it's, you know, got some viscosity to it, because I wanted it to be sort of thick, like down to like the texture of heavy cream, because you want it to coat the chickens. You want it to be nappe on the chicken. Then I put the chicken back into the sauce. Now, in a lot of the adobo recipes that Bittman talked about and that I looked at, you're then supposed to take the chicken out and grill or broil it to kind of crisp it up and char it around the edges. Romy actually deep fries his, but my broiler is where I store all my pots and pans. And I didn't really feel like deconstructing that whole big mess. And I was hungry and tired and frankly kind of lazy. And also, my broiler is underneath my oven, which means to turn on the broiler, I have to actually lay down on the floor and watch the pan in there as it broils. I don't understand that design. Who lays on the floor to cook? But that's what I have to do to see what's going on inside of there. So screw the broiler. So I just boiled it down, made it nappe, threw the chicken back in. While it was all going on, I had some jasmine rice in the rice cooker. I sauteed up some greens and there you go. Fantastic. Now, of course, I am neither Korean nor Filipino. I have no Asian in me. Although I often tell my students that I'm half Vietnamese just to kind of screw with them and see how long they actually believe me. Because what I've learned about teaching is that you can basically tell your students anything and they believe you. That's the power of education. And so I do it until one of them finally challenges me on it. But however, I have spent my fair share of time in Asia cooking and eating. So I feel like I know a little something. And my Asian confusion version of chicken adobo was really, really good. It was quite delicious, and I am quite proud to say that. It came out really great, and the whole thing took about, I don't know, half an hour, really, total cooking time. Oh, and then when I served it, I garnished it with thinly sliced scallions. So I did really thinly sliced scallions on top, and I crumbled up some of the toasted Korean nori that we had got also. And it was great. I mean, as they say in Japan, it was oishi, which means delicious. Oishi desu. It was so good. Now, if you want to do this at home, if you want to try this at home, do please, please, please do not use chicken breast. Please don't waste your time with chicken breast. There is no point. They are dry and too lean and too bland. You need to use thighs or legs, or you could even do it with wings. But as you know, there is a chicken wing shortage. If you listened to my show a few months ago, you know about that. Use chicken legs. Use the back. You need to embrace the back half of the chicken. You need to embrace the darkness, the back end of things, because that is where all the flavor is, in the nether regions of that bird. Forget about the breasts. Forget about if you think of yourself as a breast person. Just let it go. Embrace the rear. So we are just about out of time tonight, but maybe you'll go home tonight and you'll try this, or you're probably already home. Try doing it. It's good. You can look in the Times online for Romy's adobo recipe. He puts coconut milk in, like I said, but I didn't have any, so I didn't use it. If you would like to comment on anything you have heard tonight or on any other Heritage Radio show, you know you can always leave comments on the pages of our website. And we do read the comments. I look for my comments every week, and I'm always a little bit sad when I don't get any. It makes me feel like nobody's listening. So feel free to leave comments. You can also find this show on Facebook and become a fan, become a friend. Just look for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook. Let me know you're listening. I would love to hear from you. If it's raining where you are, try to stay dry, and we'll see you next week.